everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of the Female Film Critics Panel. And I love doing this show every month. And today we are talking with film critic and writer Fiona Underhill is here. And thank you so much, Fiona, for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so what we'd like to do is give you a chance to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about how you grew to fall in love with film. What's one of your earliest memories of film?
Well, I'll just quickly explain who I am, first of all. Yes. So I'm British, which you might be able to hear. So I moved to the US 6 years ago in 2016. In the UK, I was a teacher for 10 years. So I taught English, drama, and as well as media studies and film studies. And since I've been in the US, I've been a freelance film critic and writer, mainly working for a website called Jump Cut, which we might talk about a bit more later, I'm not sure. And now I'm a news writer for the Digital Fix, and I also write for Slash Film and a few other places. And yeah, I've been a film lover all of my life. I grew up watching movies in the 80s because I'm that old. So I have lots of childhood classics from the 80s that I'm sure a lot of people remember and relate to, things like Goonies and Gremlins, watching all those kind of classics, and obviously Star Wars, Indiana Jones, that kind of thing growing up.
Do you remember the first movie you went to?
At the cinema, the first thing I went to was The Black Cauldron, which is a Disney movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm notorious. I'm surprised it didn't put me off for life, because it's it's actually a really scary film. I mean, yeah. This is in the dark days of Disney. It's not like one of their better movies. But it's really kind of creepy and scary for a small child.
Yeah, I can see that. The Horned King.
Yeah, and another kind of traumatic early cinema memory I have is of E.T. I think it was a re-release. Oh, yeah. And I remember my cousin being dragged out of E.T. because he was sobbing so hard and kind of causing a scene because he was so upset about E.T.
I think E.T. did that for a lot of us.
Yeah.
I mean, that scene when he's like screaming and you're killing him, you're killing him. It's brutal. Yeah.
Definitely traumatic. Yeah. But most of my film kind of, my love for film really developed through television. So at home watching classic movies, my stepdad and my mum are both into film. My stepdad watched a lot of Westerns, which aren't my favourite, but they did watch a lot of old film, and especially at the weekends on British TV, like the afternoon, Saturday and Sunday afternoons, there'd be a lot of older films on. Mm. So that's kind of where my love developed for sort of classic Hollywood and as well.
What films did your mom love?
She, like me, we've got quite similar tastes. So we both love Paul Newman. Nice. So I do have to credit her for sort of getting me into some of the older Hollywood stars, Robert Redford as well, of course. Mm-hmm. And we also both love period dramas. So I grew up with things like Merchant Ivory films and other kind of period films from the 80s and 90s. We both really, really love those.
Yeah, I love those too. My parents are not big movie people, but they were good about encouraging conversation. My mom, you know, would say that she didn't want us mindlessly consuming. She wanted us to think about it. And my mom was more of a reader, is more of a reader than a media movie or TV. But you know, my dad will watch sports occasionally, but there's no like real shows or movies that he's like into. Although they bought this second home in Southern Utah, and there's this tiny little two screen movie theater next to their house. And so my dad has been going to see more things, and he'll like call me up and be like, what do you think? Should I see, Top Gun Maverick or something like that? I'm like, He asked me if he should see Avatar, and I was like, well, first of all, you should see it on the second Avatar, obviously, but you should see it on in an IMAX. You shouldn't see it on this tiny little screen.
See it on a big screen if you can.
Yeah. And then second of all, I was like, do you understand that this is over 3.5 hours? And he's like, what?
Yeah. People have to be prepared for that.
Yeah, you have to know what you're getting into. And I'm like, you haven't even seen the first one. But yeah, they're not that big of movie people, which is funny because I've become a film critic, and my brother did some videography and did a short and other things like that. He has a business that he runs, but he has a love for film as well. And I mean, all of their kids are way more into at least watching movies than they are. So I don't know where that all came from, but they were good about encouraging conversation and asking questions and talking about it. And I remember when I've told a story a bunch of times on here, but when I was in college, we went and saw Chocolat with my friends, and I didn't like it. And I haven't seen it since then, but I don't even really remember why I didn't like it. But I was all, spouting off to my friends about, oh, I didn't like the way they did this and the way they did this. And one of my friends, she's like, Rachel, we just wanted to watch the movie. And I was so shocked.
Yeah.
It's like, you mean you don't want to dissect it and talk about it from all angles? What? And I realized that not every family is like my family.
Yeah. College is where I started going to see films in the cinema by myself.
Yeah.
Like I had friends and I had like roommates and everything, but it is when I kind of started to realize that if I wanted to see certain things like that probably most people aren't that interested in, that I just had to start going by myself. And it's, the vast majority of the time that I go to the cinema is by myself now. Same. And it's completely normal to me.
Yeah.
And, preferred, really, because it's like, I don't really understand why people see it as a social thing when you're sitting watching something and you're not supposed to be talking anyway. So
sometimes I love going with friends, like my friend Jen. She's one of my favorites to go to a movie with. And we have this like great discussion afterwards. We talk about it. And so I really enjoy that. But other times I kind of just want to make sure it's my own opinion and just me. It depends
on the movie. Yeah, I definitely get that.
And they did have, in my college, they had they had a foreign language cinema. Now they'd probably call it international cinema, whatever. But where they played films that had been nominated for the foreign film of the Oscars or things like that. And so that was some of my first like really indie films, that I watched, or like more obscure that nobody would, that. And so that was fun that they did that at my college.
Yeah.
And are you a fan of Rachel's Reviews? Do you look forward to Family Movie Night, Female Film Critics Panels, or the Talking Disney podcast? If so, please consider supporting the podcast by becoming a patron. As a patron, you get to access monthly events such as the watch-alongs and Q&As, where you get to talk to stars and find out the behind the scenes of the movie making industry. And you can pick what I review for Family Movie Night, or even become a guest on the podcast. Podcasts and YouTube channels are expensive, and I really, really could use your help. I would so appreciate it. You also get to be a member of the Facebook group where we talk about all the films that we're seeing and we have so much fun. Go to patreon.com/hallmarkies and select one of the Rachel's fan tiers. That's patreon.com/hallmarkies.
My mom was into international film as well. So again, we had, where I'm from in the UK, there was a university quite nearby, and they had an art centre, and they'd play, that's usually where the foreign language films were playing. And I remember she loved things like the Three Colours trilogy, and so she got me into foreign language film, particularly French at the time.
Yes.
I do owe a lot of that to her.
Well, that's where I'd watch things like The Umbrellas of Cherbourg. I have a very strong memory of watching at that cinema, watching The Umbrellas of Cherbourg and just being like, wow, it's so good. So beautiful.
It's good they showed something that old. It wasn't just the new things.
Right. And I saw Babette's Feast, I remember there. That's a favorite, one I love. But yeah, that was a good experience. Another formative movie for me was I watched Hoop Dreams in high school. And I had never really spent any time in a big city. I was in, you know, the small town. I had never spent any time with characters like the people that were documented in the two basketball players or their family. And it just, I think I had, just as a young person, I had, you know, ideas about, and I watched the movie and I just realized, wow, these people are, like, especially, Arthur Aggie's mother when she gets her nursing degree, and I just remember just crying and thinking it was amazing. And so that was one that really changed not only like my ideas of what a movie could be, but just literally what I thought about people.
Mm.
Yeah, as a, you know, young teenager, that was definitely very influential for me. And of course, I've always been a big lover of animation, and I've always been a big lover of musicals.
Mm.
Even to this day, I'm a sucker.
Oh yeah, I love musicals too. I mean, I was fortunate to go to the theater quite a lot when I was quite young as well. So yeah, I do love. I live where I'm from in the UK. It's very close to the RSC. So the Royal Shakespeare Company. So I'd go and see Shakespeare plays, but then also go to Birmingham or London for musicals as well with my grandmother.
Oh, so fun. But, yeah. I went, my first musical that I ever saw on Broadway. Well, the first musical that I ever saw was in San Francisco. I saw Phantom of the Opera with my grandma. My grandma had given me the best of Andrew Lloyd Webber cassette tape and I listened to that nonstop, and then we went and saw Phantom of the Opera in San Francisco, and it was blew me away with especially the introduction with the chandelier, really great. And then, but the first musical I ever saw on Broadway was with my, I grew up in Maryland, and my choir did a like competition or something like that in New York City. And we went up there and we got the choice of whether you could go to Cats or go to Les Mis.
I hope you made the right choice.
I chose Les Mis, of course. And I was pretty obsessed with it at the time. The 10-year concert had just come out.
Les Mis was one of my first ever musicals that I saw as well.
And it's so the fact that it kind of lived up to those high expectations is pretty amazing. So that in the Disney Renaissance was very influential on me, particularly The Little Mermaid. I think that was the first movie that I ever really fell in love with.
Mm.
The songs, the, I remember, animation.
Beauty and the Beast. I remember that being such a big deal because I was 15, I think, when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this thing with like my friends, and we're all kind of like, oh, we're too old for Disney movies now.
Yeah.
But then like people were starting to talk about it and saying, oh, you know, and they were starting to be kind of buzz about it. And the fact that it was nominated for like Best Picture at the Oscars and stuff.
Yeah.
And then like a few of us were like, oh, shall we go and see it? And I remember just people being like, oh, are we actually going to go and see like an animated movie at the cinema? But yeah, we all went to see Beauty and the Beast. And then with Toy Story coming out, that was also such a massive, massive deal because obviously it being such so innovative as this new computer generated animation.
Yeah, that was, Toy Story was when I was 14 when it came out in 95. And that definitely was a game changer. Still one of my favorite movies. I love the original Toy Story. I think it's
I can remember the experience of getting to see that like with friends quite clearly and us all talking about it. Being excited about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that would definitely be a foundation film. Another one for me that the first, well, I, Home Alone was the first comedy that I ever really loved. I saw it with my grandparents and I was there visiting them for Christmas and I saw it with them and I just thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. but then another big one for me was Clueless. That came out when I was a freshman in high school. And it was just so like, so eye-opening and just I felt like, oh, they really get high school. And it was so funny. I mean, when she drives on the freeway for the first time,
yeah,
just still to this day I think it's hilarious. Keep your hands on the steering wheel at all times.
I can relate to that now better because I've moved to Los Angeles and driving here is just like fraught with danger at all times. So I can empathize with her.
Yeah, I was in LA in August and we rented a car and we were going to this the HCA awards thing where we're going to present me and my friend, and we got up to about, I don't know, 500 feet from the parking garage and the car stalled right in the middle of the road.
Oh my goodness.
We were like, oh no, what are we gonna do? We're all in these nice clothes and everything. Anyway, it ended up being quite they were like, just leave it there and go to your event. I was like, okay. but yeah,
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
LA's an interesting place. But, so did you go to film school? Is that how you ended up becoming a teacher?
No. So I went to university. I did drama. So drama, theater studies was like my first love. And I thought, like many young people, I thought I was going to be an actress. Uh-huh. But then I ended up mainly at university. It wasn't like a drama school. It was like a drama course at a university.
Okay.
And I ended up mainly doing the writing courses because I realized that I was a much better writer than actor.
Mm.
So I did like playwriting and dramaturgy, things like that. Then I left university and I went traveling and I worked for an arts organization for a little bit. And then I decided to do my teacher training. So I went to a different university for a year and did teacher training to become an English and drama teacher. Mm-hmm. It's secondary school, so it's the equivalent of middle and high school combined.
Okay.
And then, yeah, like I say, I mainly taught English, but then I did teach some drama. And then I got into, because obviously my main passion is obviously film and media. So I did get into teaching because I kind of wangled my way in basically quite forcefully into teaching media studies and film studies because, you know, they are my main passions. Yeah. And yeah, I really loved it. I still miss it to this day, teaching film studies. I mean, these were high school kids, so it's not the same as teaching it at like college, university level.
Mm-hmm.
But I did really like introducing teenagers to some older films and other films that they wouldn't have ever seen if, you know, if it hadn't been for me kind of suggesting things. And even if it wasn't always the entire film, but at least what getting them to watch clips of older things, you know, I really love doing that.
Yeah. So yeah, what were the big movies that you pushed on the kids?
Well, I did like a sort of introduction to film course. So that was obviously, I was trying to get them to watch things like Metropolis and really trying to get them to understand that there's, you know, 100 years of history, and they, you know, most of them, like most kids, have probably barely ever seen anything pre-1980.
Yeah.
So anything I could show them really was a bonus in the introduction to film. But then when I was teaching it more as like a proper course, there were a couple of topics. So one of them was British horror, and I really liked doing sort of Hammer horror and introducing them to some cool
like Dracula
British,
and stuff like that.
And British comedies as well. So again, trying to show them older things. And then we do a comparison course as well, where we'd and I taught Rear Window with that Shia LaBeouf film. Oh. Which is kind of like a remake.
Yeah, yeah. So What's that called? Suburbia or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. That's funny.
That was
cool. Yeah, my brother took a film class at the community college of the local university, and I was so disappointed. Like most of the films were just like really obscure. Like just, I don't know. They just felt like they were the favorites of the teacher, but really random. And I have a chance to really introduce your class to film, you know, the whole history of film. And that's, I can't remember off the top of my head what any of them were, but I was just like, I've watched a lot of movies. I've never even heard of most of these movies that you're recommending. I don't know. But yeah, so you were teaching. How did you end up getting to the States?
So I'm here because of my husband's job. Oh, so okay. I had already decided to get out of teaching, or to at least leave, because I worked at the same school for 10 years, and I decided to leave that job before we found out about moving here. And I was kind of in a bit of a limbo of not knowing what I was going to do or where we were going to live. And then my husband got offered the opportunity to come to LA for his job. He works in the computer games industry. Oh. So he came over to a studio. It was in Santa Monica initially, but now he's in a studio somewhere else. And so that's how we ended up here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you had already kind of decided that you were moving out of teaching even before that?
Yes, I had. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't ever think that, you know, but obviously it was a dream to sort of get back into writing. That that is my, you know, my first love.
Yeah.
And I didn't think, you know, I would be able to do it realistically. And then I found Jump Cut Online. So I'd started writing for them before we moved to the US. We were all just volunteers with Jump Cut, so it wasn't a paid position or anything. We all did it just for the love of it, the passion.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to be in a position where I didn't have to work for a few years. So I took on a lot of the work to do with Jump Cut just because I had the time. So that's how I ended up being editor-in-chief at Jump Cut for a year. But before that, I'd contributed a lot of writing to that site. And so, yeah, we all just did it for the love of it. Mm-hmm. And then that led, like it has quite a few people who wrote for Jump Cut, it has led to professional opportunities for quite a lot of us, including me. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got my job, my current job with the Digital Fix.
Yeah, you have a lot of sites on your Twitter bio. And so I was curious how you made connections with so many. You've got seven or eight of them on here. How did you do that?
A lot of it is just via Twitter and via networking. So a lot of us, I think, in the sort of film Twitter community, which has a bit of a bad rep, but we, you know, we are quite, can be quite a supportive community. And
Yeah, for the most part, my experience on Twitter has been pretty positive. I did have one point of cyberbullying in 2019, but that was more from YouTube than it was from Twitter, which YouTube is like the most toxic of any of the sites. But other than that, for the most part, I've met so many friends and been able to get so many connections, like the whole that, like I was telling you about this, awards thing, I was able to HCA awards. I was able to, present an award. It's my first time ever reading off a teleprompter. So that was an adventure. And it was pretty cool to give, Arcane, which is a show that I love, the best streaming animated show.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fun. But yeah, there's just been a lot of cool opportunities like that, from the connections that you make, online, especially during the pandemic. Like, we all needed it even more.
I mean, and I'm 5,000 miles away from my friends and family.
Yeah,
so Twitter's been a massive lifeline for me. So my any friends that I've made in LA since I've been here, it's all been via Twitter. So it's been, and like initiating things on Twitter and then meeting them in real life. But yeah, so it's the same for, you know, any kind of freelance opportunities or professional opportunities, I would say, are pretty much all down to Twitter and just networking and friends of friends, that kind of thing.
When you get a piece to write, do you normally pitch the ideas to the sites, or do they come to you and say, hey, we want this?
Yeah, it's usually pitching. I mean, I don't unfortunately have very much time anymore to pitch. And it's frustrating because there's things that come up. So, for example, I know we're going to get on to 2022 movies. So The Banshees of Inisherin, for example, I have like a pitch related to that because that was my favorite movie of last year. And I really, really loved it. And I really want to write about that, but it's just finding the time now because I do kind of a full day shift now during like the weekdays. And then I have a secondary gig with Slash Film. And so doing freelance pitches, although I would like to do more and be able to write about things I'm really passionate about, I don't have as much time anymore.
Right.
But yeah, in the past, it's just been thinking of pitches and like many of us, we just fire off an email and kind of hope for the best. I mean, I haven't done a lot of freelancing, to be honest. Like, most of my writing's been for a few particular sites, and then the freelance opportunities have just been through luck, really. I mean, Nerdist I pitched, IndieWire was them approaching me, actually.
Now, Jump Cut, it's closing, right?
It is,
That's so sad.
Yeah, so it's been running I've been with it for 6 years. I think it was running for maybe a year before that. And it's, like I said, because we're all kind of, we're doing it on a voluntary basis and we were all giving up a lot of time to it, it's just got to that point where there's no one who's able to give the amount of time it needs anymore, really. And also just financially, you know, we had a Patreon and we were trying to pay writers where we could, but it was just very, very limited in terms of how much money we could bring in and how much we could feasibly pay people. So like a lot of sites that are run by things like Patreon, you know, we just didn't have very much money at all. I mean, we literally, you know, we're bringing in a pittance, really. And like we were putting in the sort of editorial team were putting in not just time but our own money as well to the site. I mean, it was definitely a labor of love. It was definitely a passion project for those who were involved, but just not sustainable, unfortunately.
They had a good run, so that's good. I know, it's so hard. And people just feel entitled, like they get almost offended when you want to be paid for your work, or if something can't, I don't know, they expect everything for free, online, which is hard. But
yeah, I mean, we were always very clear with people who, you know, we were lucky. We did have a big team of writers, and we were just very honest and said, you know, if we don't have any money, we can't afford to pay you. But there was, you know, some circumstances where we could pay for the odd thing here and there, but it was, yeah, it was like £10 here, £20 there for, yeah, a piece. It, you know, it really wasn't very much, because we were just Patreon funded, and right, we didn't have any other source of income.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about 2022 movies. So you said your favorite.
Yes.
Banshees of Inisherin.
Mm-hmm.
I struggled with that movie, I have to be honest. I just, the fingers
were... I think people,
I just didn't believe that he would do that. I didn't believe, mm-hmm, that he would cut his fingers off. He's a violin player. The whole reason he cut off the friendship was because he wanted to play. Yeah. He wanted to write music. So why would he do that? I just felt that was where I struggled. I did laugh quite a bit, and I went back and forth. Should I go fresh? Should I go rotten? What do I think? Because I did think it was pretty funny, but yeah, I don't know. The fingers were hard for me.
Yeah, I really loved it. The reason I loved it so much is because it, going back to me talking about what I studied at university, mm-hmm, is that it's very, very much in the Irish theatrical tradition. So it's really strongly influenced by the theatre, the playwrights of Ireland, mm, and also the literature, but especially the theatre. And that's, Martin McDonagh obviously has a background in the theatre, and he's a playwright as well as a screenwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, the humour is so Irish, because I have Irish family as well. I'm, you know, that's my background. And the humour is just so, so, so specifically Irish. And the darkness of it, the balancing of like all those tones, and
yeah,
the layers of like depression with the humor, and also even like the sort of the shock of kind of the finger thing as well. It's just extremely Irish, and that's what I loved about it.
Yeah, my favorite movie of the year, and I don't think it's come out in the UK yet, but was The Puss in Boots, The Last Wish.
I've heard that's really good. Yeah. I really want to watch it. It's on VOD, but it's like $25 rental, yeah, I think, at the moment. But when it becomes cheaper or free, I'm definitely going to watch, yeah, it.
Well, I'm a big animation fan, and the animation blew me away. I'm a big sucker for this kind of hybrid part CG, part 2D animation that we've gotten since Spider-Verse, where there's, okay, just like there's like a flatness, but a fullness to the, mm-hmm, the style. I just love it. And they have that here. They're not worried about, I like the fact that animation right now is not worried about being very realistic,
mm,
that the films are having a unique style to the artists. And we kind of got away from that for a while because of Pixar, which I love Pixar, but they were really concerned about things being lifelike, yeah, and realistic,
yeah,
and I'm kind of glad that now we're sort of in this more experimental phase, I feel like,
mm,
which is fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then I loved Marcel Lachelle with Shoes On. You see that?
I still haven't seen that either. I know, I'm sorry, so I'm a good, little bit behind on animation, but yeah, I do need to get to that.
So charming, so charming. My favorite live action film is also kind of obscure, but I loved it. It's called Hit the Road.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was so good, because I thought it did such a great job of having all of the tension, having all of the, you know, it's just obviously the situation, they're trying to get older brother out of Iran. But it also feels like every family road trip that you've, yeah, ever taken, you know, with, yeah, little brother being so adorable. And
yeah, the relationship between the mother and the older son, I thought, yes, was very, very like relatable, and, you know, so well, presented. It just was, mm-hmm, something that it did have a universe, universality to it. Where, you know, even though the like you say, the brother's leaving, the mother can't help but also be a classic mother.
And there's like ambiguity. They don't tell you everything that's happening. You kind of figure out little clues all along the way, which I really enjoyed. And and the fact that it's the director's first film, Panapanahi.
He's the son of a prominent Iranian filmmaker.
Who has a movie out right now called The Bear, I think it's called. Or
it's called No Bears.
Oh, No Bears.
Yeah, it's really good. I'd recommend that one as well.
Oh, cool. I had never seen a movie, an Iranian movie that was set in the like countryside. Not that I've seen tons.
The countryside was stunning.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Such a variety to the landscape. Yeah, I don't think I'd seen that much like variety.
Yeah, everyone I'd seen has been set in Tehran in the city.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was very unique.
Yeah, I agree. It is a really good movie. I really liked it.
Then my other favorite was RRR. It's so good.
Yeah, amazing.
I wish I was in LA. I could have gone to one of those. They had those big events.
I did see it in a movie theater when it first came out in April of last year. And it was just me and a Indian family in the cinema. So it wasn't quite a massive event like they've been having recently with everyone dancing in the aisles. But I'm still definitely glad I saw it on the big screen.
I saw Morbius and RRR on the same day.
I saw Ambulance and RRR on the same day. So the Michael Bay movie Ambulance and RRR. It was my birthday. My birthday treat was to see that double bill.
At least that was a like watchable Michael Bay movie.
I liked Ambulance.
It was decent.
Yeah.
Those are some of my first. I have to say, I was pretty disappointed with this Oscar season. Most of the screeners that I got, I was just underwhelmed. Like most of them I gave like a mild recommendation to, but there were a lot of movies that other people just loved that I thought were fine. Tar.
I often feel like that with Oscar season, to be honest, and which is why the Banshees of Inisherin and like being one of the kind of front runners, that's very, very rare for me. Like, honestly, for the last like two decades or more, I've not, like, my favorite film of the year being up for Oscars. I know it hasn't been yet, but, you know, it's likely to be. That just never, ever happens to me. It's actually quite rare that my favorite film is an Oscar movie this time.
It can be a real slog going through all those screeners and just not finding anything you love. Like last year I loved Tick Tick Boom. That was my favorite movie of the year for 2021. And I didn't really find much live action that I loved. Like I loved Tick Tick Boom, Hit the Road and RRR would probably be the two. There was some animation that I loved, but I did really enjoy the Avatar sequel. I didn't think I would. And I thought that, I mean, it is too long.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No. And because of the length, it just really, really puts me off, to be honest.
It's really long. And I don't blame you. I did think that it actually had like a moving story about this family. And it's basically a refugee movie. They're trying to find a place. This military is attacking them. They're trying to find a refuge somewhere. And they end up in this water colony kind of so I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the family themes and that kind of refugee themes, it's definitely 30 minutes too long. There's no question about that, but I still overall liked it. But most of my favorite films of 2022 I saw earlier in the year, like RRR and Hit the Road and Top Gun Maverick and things like that. Of the Oscar contenders, aside from Avatar and RRR, the only one I really, Top Gun Maverick, I guess, is. But I did really enjoy Decision to Leave. Did you get to see that?
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah. Again, I saw that at a cinema, which I'm pleased I did. I'm kind of mixed on that movie. I think technically on a visual level, it is incredible. Like the cinematography and the editing, so insanely well done. Like, and the special effects, which I know people wouldn't assume it's a special effects movie, but if you see how much of the kind of technical brilliance of that film was achieved with special effects, it's just incredible. But I was kind of mixed on it. I wish I had loved it more. Mm-hmm. And I understand why people like it, but the story didn't grip me as much as I was hoping.
I kind of felt like I was sort of a modern day Double Indemnity. Sort of this toxic love story, film noir kind of a thing. But yeah, one thing I like to ask my guests for this is, are you optimistic or pessimistic about the state of film?
No.
Because I think there's room to be optimistic because so many more people can tell their stories than ever have before. There's so many outlets. There's so many places to be featured, so many festivals, so many streaming services that there's something for everybody. And there's also, I feel like, so many different ways to get your story told. And so I think that's positive, but obviously with closing down cinemas for so long and getting people to come back, it's been difficult.
Yeah. I mean, I, like most people, I am quite depressed about the franchise and sequels and MCU kind of dominating just, you know, the top 10 best box office movies of the year. The top 20 are often just sequel, franchise. And I am quite depressed about that, but you know, there are glimmers of hope here and there. Like rom-coms did quite well last year, so there was The Lost City and Ticket to Paradise, Marry Me. Yeah, and financially, like at the box office, they did quite well.
Yes,
and I think Magic Mike 3 is probably going to do well at the box office as well. So
I've been so excited to see that too, because I love rom-coms. I cover them on my podcast, Hallmarkies Podcast. There was a drought of romantic comedies for almost a decade.
Yeah.
You'd have hardly any, maybe a indie like The Big Sick or something like that would come along, but a mainstream romantic comedies, I mean, just hardly any.
Yeah.
So it was very exciting. I agree.
Yeah, we have to rely on places like Netflix for like YA romance, that kind of thing. But other than that, I feel, I'm struggling to find romantic like movies and shows and stuff. I'm always on the search for them.
That's why a lot of people turn to Hallmark, because they're like the only place making romantic comedies.
Horror is doing well at the box office as well. So again, 2022 was a really good year for horror, and like this January 2023 is already a good month for horror.
I saw your Megan review.
Happy about that. So there are definitely glimmers of hope in amongst all the kind of pessimism.
Yeah.
You know, I'm worried. I mean, even in LA, and this is like the movie town,
right,
even here we've had like movie theaters closing, like the ArcLight still hasn't reopened, the Cinerama Dome, that's still closed. And we've had the Landmark go as well. Those were like the two main theaters I went to where they'd have like Q&As with directors and actors and people. So it is worrying, definitely worrying and depressing.
Well, what is one unpopular opinion that you I always ask my guests to share an unpopular opinion that you had, and what was that experience like? I know it can be intense.
I'll give you a recent one, because we are talking about 2022 movies. So I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to share the fact that I absolutely hated Women Talking.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
The Sarah Polley movie. Mm-hmm. Now, this was very disappointing for me, because I really, really love Stories We Tell and Take This Waltz, which are both Sarah Polley movies that she's directed, And so I had really high expectations going into this. And I unfortunately felt that the writing was atrocious. Mm-hmm. It's not well written and not well acted, in my opinion. Oh. And people have been very... Yeah. The main thing people have been critical of is the way it looks. So that, like, the color grading is really weird and it doesn't look very good. But in my opinion, that's kind of the least of its problems.
Well, that's one thing about me as a critic. Aside from maybe animation, if people are coming to me for like technical knowledge, that I'm the wrong critic. Most of the time that kind of stuff is lost on me. It has to be really bad for me to like, oh, that sound mix was terrible. Or I don't know. I just, most of the time I'm like, oh, okay, I guess. Yeah, I can see what you're saying. But I saw that at New York Film Festival. I was nervous expectations, you know, it seemed like the kind of thing that would be very preachy. And so the fact
that's why I felt it about it, I'm afraid. I thought it was very preachy.
I felt like that they did a pretty good job of presenting the characters as kind of well-rounded, like they weren't just like, it wasn't just like men are evil and women are saints. I felt like there was some nuance there, like that whole section when they talk about their sons and how much they love their sons and things like that. I appreciated. I mean, it's a little dry. It's not like on my favorites of the year. Where do I have it? With the one that I had the unpopular opinion that's kind of similar is I didn't care for She Said.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I thought She Said was a lot better than Women Talking, I have to say. She Said is not like my favorite of the year or anything, but I liked it a lot more.
The thing I didn't like about it, there's lots of things to like about it. The performances, I particularly think Jennifer Ely, as the main witness, I think it's a shame that she's not been touted or promoted the highlight of the movie for me. But my problem with the movie is I just felt like it would made me uncomfortable. The fact that you have Hollywood basically giving them a pat on the back and look, we got rid of this evil guy and look how brave we all were. And it's just a systematic problem. It wasn't just one guy.
Yeah.
And so I felt like I wish the movie had been, made by somebody outside of the system, like maybe an indie or something, or maybe from another country, because I just felt like they shouldn't be, the problem has not been solved. It wasn't just one guy. And so that kind of annoyed me, and like painting certain people as heroes. Not that you should blame victims. I understand that, but they also appeased him a lot. And praised him in their speeches and their and nobody's ever held kind of accountable for that in the movie. And so it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
We'd like to take a second and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. It's the Hallmarkies Merch Store.
Are you looking for that perfect gift for the postable, hardy, or Hallmarkie in your life?
What about getting that t-shirt or hoodie that will help you stand out at your next holiday party?
Now is the time to check out the Hallmarkies Merch Store.
Full of festive designs by artists like Jessica Miller, Carrie from Hallmark Comics, and more.
You can even have more than just shirts, but totes, cell phone cases, notebooks, mugs, and more.
And it isn't just Hallmark. We have designs for Anna Green Gables, Man from Snowy River, The Nanny, and more.
Every purchase at the merch store goes to help support the podcast and allows us to make the great content you know and love.
There are frequent sales, so go to tpublic.com/stores/Hallmarkies or see the link in the description.
That's tpublic.com/stores/Hallmarkies.
Oh, I don't know. But anyway, that was why I didn't like it. Not that it wasn't well made. I just felt like, no, you didn't earn this. You didn't earn this pat on the back.
Yeah, understand that. Yeah. And I think they had to narrow the focus from the book because the book is about more than just Harvey Weinstein. But for the film, they decided to just purely focus on that. Just because, you know, translating a book to a movie is not always easy. Yeah. But yeah, I definitely get the kind of congratulatory Hollywood thing, definitely.
The other thing I thought was weird is they open up the movie with Carey Mulligan's character having pretty severe postpartum. like pretty bad. And then they just like forget about it. And the main solution seemed to be that like she solved it from working hard. I'm like, that's not how it works. Like, you don't just like, I thought that was a mess too. I didn't like that.
I mean, I quite like the depiction of motherhood in She Said, I think you mentioned this earlier. I liked the depiction of motherhood in She Said more than in Tar. In Tar, the way that motherhood is kind of presented in that really annoyed me, and the way that she was kind of supposed to be in the father role, where she could just be swanning all over the world and then occasionally kind of visit her own child and just kind of have this relationship with the child where she wasn't very involved, and she just occasionally kind of swoop in and then like swan out of her life again. And
one of my frustrations with Tar, I overall gave it a mild recommendation, but one of my things that kept me from loving it is that I didn't feel like they really portrayed accurately why she loved music. Like she would debate about it and she would fight about it with people, and she'd have these diatribes with her students and stuff. But one thing I love in the movie Amadeus is when Salieri is just looking at the music and it like, he just floats away, you know, like he can hardly contain his emotions. He loves that music and he can't understand why God would allow this nincompoop in his eyes to be able to have this gift, you know, like this fool. How could God let this happen? And so you really get to understand the character because you know how much he loves music. And I at the beginning of the movie, she says that that you never come to revelation about music in performance. It's always in practice. But I think what that ended up doing is that there was no time for her as a character to really just indulge in the music. It's always in practice. You get like a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here. And I think it would have made made her a more interesting character if I had really understood her love of music.
Yeah, I think you're right in that she viewed it more as like a conquering, a competitive thing rather than a passion.
Yeah,
is how I interpreted it. And she's definitely a complex character. And I think that's why she's getting so much attention, is because we don't see that many women characters who are, you know, assholes, who are this, the genius character. We've seen it with men so many times, haven't we? Where they're a genius, therefore they're an asshole to everyone.
Right, yeah. And if she wins, I won't be sad. She was great in the movie. I felt like the script was kind of messy.
Yeah.
In that one.
It's my least favorite Todd Field movie, because they had a screening at the Cinematheque here of Little Children and In the Bedroom. Mm-hmm. And Little Children for me is by far his best film. Tar's my least favorite of those three, but you know, I'm kind of mixed on Tars, and I do think it's an interesting one to discuss, and it's definitely one of those ones where everyone has kind of come out of that film with something slightly different interpretations, which is always good.
Yeah, I can see that. I felt like I was almost nothing but unpopular opinions. There were a lot of movies that other people loved that I didn't love. I didn't love Babylon. I didn't love Glass Onion.
I didn't love Glass Onion.
No, I thought
I really disliked Glass Onion. Oh,
somebody else agrees with me. I wasn't a big fan of The Fablemans. I 3,000 Years of Longing, I didn't enjoy. I just, like, I was such a grump.
I mean, but Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is like the big darling of the season. I thought it was fine. I didn't really love it. I found the editing overwhelming, and I think it took away from a lot of what I would have enjoyed it more if it had calmed down a little bit. And I realized the entire point of the movie is it's multiverses, and that's the point. You know, the point is that she keeps getting pulled out of one universe into another, and I understand that, but I would have enjoyed it more if I could have taken in some of the moments a little bit more, I think.
I agree. I gave it a fresh. I enjoyed it, but I didn't think it was, I'm not with the haters because there's like this whole group who are like, oh, it's terrible. Not there, but I'm definitely not in the masterpiece crowd either. And yeah, I feel same. Like there were definite moments where I'm like, okay, you're getting a little try hard here. You're getting a little pretentious, too much with the rocks and stuff like that. But
I did think Stephanie Hsu, sorry, I'm going to mispronounce her name, but I thought she was amazing. And I thought
were good.
Yeah.
They all did a good job. It was fun, creative, something, but I agree with you on that. It's always an interesting experience when you have, I don't know, I just felt like 2022 was my year for having lots of unpopular opinions.
I'm used to it. Like I say, that is usually me. I'm usually the grump about pretty much everything that everyone likes. But
well, and I felt like I was really kind of, it was a bold pick to have Puss in Boots as my number one, but it's building momentum. People are really enjoying it. And so that makes me happy because I think they took some real risks and they did not have to try as hard as they did for like a, you know, what is it like the sequel to a Shrek spinoff. They could have totally just phoned in that movie. Yeah. And the fact that they made something so cool with such a great villain and such good characters and amazing animation was, I think, really cool. Yeah. I can't wait for you to see it.
I definitely want to.
So what's something that you've written, I guess, that you're particularly proud of? Well written.
One thing I'm proud of was that I got to interview Sandy Powell, the costume designer for Jump Cut. So that's something I'm very proud of. But in terms of my actual writing, I'd probably say a piece I wrote about The Green Knight. So I was talking earlier about pitching. The Green Knight is a film I really, really loved. It was 2021 release. Yeah. And I did actually manage to write like 3 or 4 pieces for that, thank goodness, because it was before I got my job with the digital fix, so I had more time. And I wrote a piece for the film stage about The Green Knight, and I got into some of the kind of symbolism in the film, and I was sort of talking about the fact that Sir Gawain is kind of quite often portrayed with stars around him, and the fact that he's kind of associated with the heavens, and how the Green Knight is kind of associated with Earth, and it's like this constant push and pull of these two kind of forces in that film. And I just got a lot into kind of the allegories and the symbolism and stuff surrounding the Green Knight.
I'll have to read that. What's that on?
The film stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of things that I am proud of. I cover the Christmas movie season for Hallmarkies podcast, and so that's always really intense. And it's just very exciting when you watch so many movies and then you find that one that is really special and you can tell people about. There was this movie called Merry Textmas, which was all set in Oaxaca, and it was so fun, such a fun concept, fun story, showcasing Oaxaca, Mexico, and all the different traditions there. And I feel like I was able to kind of introduce that to a lot of people and a lot of, you know, that are in, so either in the Hallmark scene or in the Christmas movie scene, that they would have just brushed by it and not noticed it. But a lot of people saw it and were like, wow, that was actually really fun and really good. And there is something to be said for like watching as much as possible.
Yeah,
watching,
because then
quote, unquote, everything.
Yeah.
Because you find stuff you would never find otherwise, and you're able to tell people about it. And that's when becoming a critic, being a critic is really meaningful. And it's exciting when I can do that with animated films as well. Really loved, it's just coming out this month, a movie called Little Nicholas, out of France. It was so good about that. It's both this cute little story about this little boy Nicholas is drawing, but it's also at the same time about the creator of Little Nicholas and his experience kind of writing and coming up with a character, and Goscinny, I think is his name. Anyway, it was really good, both about like being a creator and also just this charming, sweet little story. And when you can introduce people to something that they would never have found otherwise, it's very exciting,
I think. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, I think my family is sometimes a bit concerned about how many movies I watch, but it's like you say, it's when you try and watch so much, and I particularly do try to champion things that hardly anyone has heard of, hardly anyone's seen. You know, I try to watch films that are directed by women. I try to watch international films, and I, you know, like you say, you just try and get people to realize that there are good films out there, like especially in 2020, for example, because everyone was saying, you know, there's not been any films released in 2020. There's a pandemic, nothing was released. Yeah. And it's like, I was really trying to get people to pay attention, like on streaming, at home, there were so many good films. Mm-hmm. And it's like, just pay attention to what's out there. There's so many good things and you're missing out.
Well, and it was really cool. I mean, one of the benefits of the pandemic was getting to attend Sundance and TIFF and South by Southwest and Annecy Film Festival in France. All these things I wanted to attend for years, all of a sudden I could virtually. And so that was so cool. So in that way, I saw a whole lot of films that I probably wouldn't have or would have taken me a long time to see, which is interesting about 2020. But yeah, just getting people to get out of their comfort zone and try something new, maybe with subtitles. They come back and they're like, wow, that was really good. It's really good. So, well, very good. Thank you so much for coming on talking. This was so much fun. I had a great time getting to know you. And if people want to follow you on Twitter and other things, how can they do that?
My Twitter handle is literally just my name. So it's just @FionaUnderhill. And like I say, I mainly write for the Digital Fix and /film.
Great. And you can, I have the playlist for all of my female film critics panel entries. So check that out. And also you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. So check that out. Also make sure that if you are listing it on iTunes, please leave your ratings and reviews. That really helps a lot. And if you are watching on YouTube, please give the video a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. Appreciate that so much. And we also have merch store and patron group. So check that out. And thanks so much, Fiona. This was great. I really enjoyed it. And we'll have to talk again later on in the year.
Thank you for having me on.
All right. Bye, everyone.